Siding Unlimited, named the best window installers, not just here, but in the whole USA. Get the best. Siding Unlimited, 5-time winner as America's best window installer. For windows you call Siding Unlimited, first and directly, SidingUnlimited.com.
A little less than 8 hours until first pitch from American Family Field, Brewers and Cubs, game two of the NLDS. I was kind of chuckling over the weekend. The Cubs were taking batting practice on Saturday leading up to the game. And they had Phil Collins' One More Night playing in the background.
Slow it down.
A really nice jam if you're shopping at Hobby Lobby or maybe in an elevator.
But, getting ready to go to bed, yeah.
And not exactly pump-up music, so a very deft touch here, right? The home field advantage. And, of course, a slow jam, karaoke jam for Brewers broadcaster Jeff Levering, who joins us on the line right now. Jeff, when was the last time you performed this?
It's been a long time since I've performed anything, Greg, but not a long time since I've listened to Phil Collins. It's on repeat, pretty much. I love Phil Collins.
I love the little touches like that, right? I mean, I remember when the Toronto Raptors were here playing the Bucks in the playoffs, and the music as they're introducing the players was the theme song to Barney. I thought that was a nice touch at the Fiserv Forum. In a similar touch yesterday. That's kind of the fun part of this stuff, the behind-the-scenes stuff you don't see or hear all the time.
Yeah, it really is. And they're not the first team that's ever done that. There are a lot of teams that will play just very soft, easy listening. Some people do, some teams do classical music while the other team will be taking batting practice. You know, Mozart and Beethoven go really well with crack and homers. So that's not unfamiliar. It does put you in a different frame of mind, I would think, if you're listening to that type of music. As opposed to some of the other stuff that you're listening to get your veins pumping a little bit more.
Well, Jeff, I wanted to ask you about Jackson Chourio and what you saw during the game on Saturday, because I'll tell you what, I didn't see when his injury happened exactly, but we were pretty close to it. And all of a sudden, I looked over and he was down, and I could see his face from where we were sitting, and I said, oh no, oh gosh, what happened? And then you had Pat Murphy come over, you had the other coaches come over, and they're all discussing, and then he walks off, and he was looking as he was going back into the dugout, just looking up. I'm kind of curious, from your perspective, what you were able to see, what you were thinking, and what the fans should be thinking now as we go into Game 2 tonight.
So a few different parts to that. As I was on the call for that was the ninth and final run that the Brewers scored, and it was in the bottom of the second inning. Chourio had hit three times already in the second inning. It was 3-for-3 at 3 RBIs. So you're sitting there and he beats out that play and you're feeling really good about the situation. And then the collective hearts, I think, went into everybody's throats when he's not running at full speed and he's limping a bit back towards the first base bag. And then Murph comes out and you just start thinking to yourself, oh, no, not again, because he missed about a month because of the hamstring earlier this season. And then the Brewers promptly won 14 in a row after he went out, unrelated to anything. But it seems like, and he ran yesterday during the batting practice and the practice session yesterday, it seemed as if it was a mild hamstring thing. They're not calling it a strain anymore, which is good. Apparently he passed all the tests yesterday. We'll see if he's in the lineup penciled in today. That would be a really big sign if he could be in that leadoff spot against Shota Imanaga tonight for game number two. You just cross your fingers. And from all intents and purposes, he said last night that it was not, or 2 nights ago, that it was not as bad as the hamstring that he felt previously this season.
That almost makes it even more tricky in my mind, Jeff, right? Because you know there's a little something there, but it's not fully blown out. You don't, you know, need that month off. The Brewers obviously have long-term goals here, and you've got this entire month potentially to achieve those goals. You also have a day off tomorrow. It becomes an interesting decision here. I'd be shocked to see him in the field if he were playing. Maybe it's a DH situation, but he plays the game one way, and it's full throttle. That's the one thing that kind of makes you nervous here if he's got to be on the base paths again.
He's very similar to Sal Frelick, right, where he's got one gear and one gear only, and it's tough to tell him to slow down, especially being a 21-year-old kid who's never really experienced injury before this season when he hurt the hamstring. So I agree with you. We'll see. And if he is in the lineup and if he is in the field, then I have a feeling that he's going to be guns a-blazing tonight. So there's no reason, if he's in the lineup, to worry about it. because the Brewers have so much at stake that they cannot afford to lose him for more than if it's just one ball game. If he's out for a while, I don't know if the Brewers can afford it, even though they've got Isaac Collins waiting in the wings, and he did a great job in the month of August and was the player of the month in terms of a rookie in the National League for that entire month. So they do have some reserves, but, man, it's really nice to have Jackson Chourio in that lineup, and hopefully he's good to go tonight. And if he's not, hopefully for game three.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Aaron Ashby is the Brewers' starting pitcher tonight. Can you walk us through that strategy?
Well, for what the Brewers are trying to do with the opener situation, Michael Busch, the leadoff hitter, is a left-handed batter. You flip Ian Happ around if he's in the number three spot. Kyle Tucker is in the number three spot potentially. So you've got that left-hander who's on the mound to get you off on the right foot with the top part of their order. Even say a Suzuki has struggled against lefties over the course of the season at times. But it just gives you a different look. And if you bring Quinn Priester into the ballgame afterwards, it just gives him a better matchup with some of those right-handed hitters down towards the bottom of the lineup. It makes Craig Counsell make a decision, too. Do you want to load up the top of the order with right-handers just to get through the first inning, or do you just play it like normal, knowing it's just going to be one time through the order for Aaron Ashby to get through there? So there's some science behind it. This is not the first time the Brewers have done this. They did it with Jared Koenig a bunch last year. They even did it with D.L. Hall and Quinn Priester earlier this season towards the beginning part of May and the month of June. So nothing new for Quinn Priester to come out of the bullpen and be a bulk guy. Just the first time they'd be using Aaron Ashby in the situation.
Yeah, I guess the question is, When do you see Priester? And, right. And it will be Priester, right? Not Jose Quintana. Quintana's a lefty. You wouldn't do this, I don't believe, if Quintana was your starter in game two. But does Ashby go one inning? Is it 30 pitches? Is it just, you know what I mean? Like, looking good here to go two innings with him after pitching an inning and a third on Saturday.
You made the point of the fact that there's an off day tomorrow too, Greg, that you have that extra day of rest. You had a day of rest yesterday. You can roll with whoever you want to roll with today, knowing you got a day off tomorrow. It could be a situation where the Brewers are out in front. Say they get to Imanaga and knock him out in, say, the second or the third inning. And if Ashby's rolling, give him two innings. And if they're up a few runs, maybe you see Jacob Mizorowski. I don't know. I mean, you could do a number of different things depending on how the game plays out today. Priester was so much better at home that I would venture to guess that he would be the more likely guy to come in today, whereas Quintana would get the start at Wrigley. He was phenomenal on the road. A road playoff start is not going to ruffle his feathers one bit. He's been there. He's done that before. I would say it would be more Quintana for game three and like a Priester-Mizorowski combo play for game number two.
You think we're going to have the same start, anything similar? There was so much energy. I'll tell you what, Jeff, that had to be so exciting for you to call because it took us a little longer than we had hoped to get into parking, and all of a sudden the fireworks are going off. I'm like, oh my gosh, did somebody hit a home run already? You got the Cubs going off, and then the Brewers just matched it. That was so much fun. Can we keep that up tonight?
I sure hope so. I mean, I don't know if they're going to hit three straight doubles and three straight pitches tonight like they did in the first inning on Saturday afternoon. But, man, it was electric at the ballpark. And I've been a part of this run. This is my 11th year, and I've been in the playoffs now with this team 7 of the last 8 years. And that's as loud as I have heard that place. It's also the most Brewers fans for a Cubs game that I've ever experienced as well. I said on the broadcast probably 3/4, and I think I undersold it. It was probably 85% Brewers fans in that ballpark on Saturday afternoon, and I would venture to think that it's going to be about the same tonight, too.
I'm glad you brought that up because I was looking, and I said it's a little bit harder to tell when you're looking out at the whole ballpark because of the colors, right? I mean, you got a lot of people in blue, but we knew who was walking out when they were leaving the game early. Those were Cubs fans.
The third inning when people were leaving, you knew that was a deeper shade of blue that was leaving the ballpark and getting their way onto the I-94 interstate. So it was a great atmosphere, and there was a lot to cheer for. And I'm glad the Brewers fans had something to cheer for early. I feel like after Michael Busch hit that home run to lead off the ball game against Freddie Peralta, it could have been really ugly in terms of just the fan bases and the noise and whatnot. So to have that answer immediately in the bottom of the first inning, I think it was huge.
Jeff Levering joining us here, Brewers and Cubs later tonight, 7 o'clock. Our coverage starts here on WTMJ. It's such a crazy thing in baseball, how quickly it moves, Jeff, because you're talking about all the pregame pomp and circumstance, right? The introductions, everything's going off. There's a buzz in the venue. 40,000 people are on their feet. And then 4 pitches into the game, the Brewers are losing, right? And those Cubs fans made themselves very loud, even though they weren't as many as we've seen before. And then momentum changes quickly. And in the span of about 7 pitches, Craig Counsell is instantly regretting his Game 1 starter decision. That's how fast things changed in that game yesterday or the other day. It was incredible to watch.
That's how postseason is played, Greg. You know that. And it's not like the regular season where, okay, well, it was a 4-run first inning and we're going to roll our starter out there because our bullpen's been taxed and we're just going to let them wear it. This is the postseason. Those guys are on such a short leash out there on the mound that when they run into trouble, you're going to see some action quickly. And you saw that with Craig. And Craig went to the bullpen in the first inning, and then he went to the bullpen again in the second inning after Soroka was starting to get lit up like a Christmas tree. So it was kind of nice to see all the moving and the shaking early and to jump out to that 9-1 lead. You felt really good, and Peralta was dealing, and the scouting report came true, right, with the Cubs. They only score runs when they hit homers. They have really struggled with hitting with runners in scoring position. They scored 3 runs in that game on Saturday afternoon, all solo homers. So if you can keep the ball in the ballpark, I think the Brewers have a really good opportunity to win this series.
Jeff, I'd love to go behind the scenes a little bit in your world, especially here at playoff time. How do you balance, like, play-by-play and storytelling and inside the game analysis with all the stats? Is there a ton of prep? Is there a little prep and a lot of just off the cuff? What's your world like?
Well, it's a lot of prep. I mean, all the information is there at your fingertips. It's just a matter of what you want to do. I'd say that there's less kind of fluff. I mean, we still have to have our fun, right? And it was fun when it was 9-1 and you could kind of get off the rails for a couple of moments. But it's the playoffs, and I think people are living and dying on every pitch, just like if you're in the stands, you are, or if you're watching it on TV, or if you're listening to it on the radio, doing whatever you're doing. So it's our job to inform, and there's less of the fun, and it's more of, okay, here's the nuts and bolts of baseball. So, yeah, there's some story time and how this person got to this place and how they were in the regular season and how they were against the Cubs in the regular season. You're filling in the blanks more of that context as opposed to more of the fluff, if you know what I'm saying. So for me, it's just more game prep and situations and being ready for a potential pitching change or an offensive substitution or a defensive substitution. It's a lot of thinking ahead and kind of thinking like a manager would in these playoff games.
Not going to lie, I love that storytelling. Like, tell me about Aunt Janice and the cookies that they would make before the games when he was a kid. Okay, I love it.
It's all good stuff. That's part of the romance of baseball.
Yeah, Quinn Priester's grandmother baked cookies for the clubhouse the last time the Brewers were at Wrigley.
That's
so, I mean,
right.
Maybe that'll ring true the next time we're there after the ball game and before game number 3 on Wednesday. You just never know.
Well, I saw GM Matt Arnold in the bowels of the stadium after Saturday's game, and he walked by me and shook my hand. We shook hands, and he said, 1 down, 10 to go. And then he kept walking.
That's right.
So that's the mindset here of this Brewers team. Looking forward to tonight's game.
It.
Coverage gets underway at 7 o'clock. Jeff, we're just going to keep doing this with you as long as the Brewers are playing. I'm booking you now for next Monday because it's a fun ride and you can help take us behind the scenes.
You got it. That would be game 1 of the NLCS. Would be next Monday at American Family Field if it comes to be that way. So, I mean, this is 3 Mondays in a row. Let's keep the good times rolling, guys.
Good stuff, Jeff. We appreciate it, man. Thank you. Have a good call tonight.
You got it. See you guys.
12:51 here on WTMJ. As Jessica waves her rally towel here in the studio.
It's also a good arm exercise.
I suppose it is, yeah. The towels are nice. Definitely nice. And, of course, you could get to the game early if you want to catch the Cubs taking batting practice. You might hear a little Phil Collins. That's what they did last time.
One more night.
That was good.
One more win.
12:52 on WTMJ.